From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We know it when we see it. Perfectionism in yourself or someone else. Something beyond high achieving to where it's got to be just so, where anything less is failure, unacceptable, disappointing to someone, yourself, a parent who had such high hopes, the whole world maybe. Perfectionists have built a lot of great things, but it's not easy to live or live with perfectionism. This hour on Point, the science and psychology of perfectionism. You can join the conversation. Is this you? Never quite satisfied? Is this somebody you know? What's the difference between high achievement, excellence, and perfectionism? And what makes, drives, a perfectionist? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now, a recovering perfectionist and expert on perfectionism. From Cleveland, Ohio, I'm joined by Dr. Amy Przeworski. She's a professor of psychology at Case Western Reserve University. She's a working therapist and researcher. She also writes a blog for Psychology Today called Don't Worry, Mom. And she's just wrapped up a study on perfectionism and family environment. Amy, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So to be clear, you're a recovering perfectionist yourself. What does that mean?
Yes, it means that I've always struggled with perfectionism myself. Even as a young child, I would say that I struggled with it. And more recently, I've found ways to make sure that the perfectionism that I have is something that's helpful and something that's adaptive, not something that's getting in the way.
Is perfectionism a problem? Is it an asset? Is it a pathology? How do you look at it?
That's a great question. It's both, really. What research shows is that there's a positive perfectionism and there's also a negative perfectionism. So the positive perfectionism helps with striving and setting goals and working towards the goals, whereas the negative type of perfectionism is a person who is unable to be satisfied with their performance. They're always pushing themselves to be perfect, to get everything exactly perfect. And a lot of times that's something that can interfere in their functioning. It's something that can interfere in their ability to complete tasks. And it's something that ultimately will also lead to them being pretty unhappy.
Do you have a sense? Have there been surveys done? I don't know how you'd winkle it out. What portion of the general population would fall in the category of perfectionist?
That's a good question. I don't know of any studies that have demonstrated a specific percentage. It is associated with some of the more common psychological diagnoses. So social anxiety is something that's very associated with perfectionism, worries, OCD, and then also eating disorders as well. So I would expect that it's a fairly high percent of the population that experiences perfectionism, whether the positive type or the negative type.
And what are we learning about the science of this, and how much is environmental, and how much may even could it be genetic?
Yes, it certainly could. So there's a recent study that came out that was conducted by Jason Moser at Michigan State University, and it's been published in the last several years. And it indicates that there's a fairly large genetic component to perfectionism. So we tend to think of perfectionism as being something that's a trait. And when we think about traits, we think about them as being partially genetic and partially environmental. This study looked at twins and found that there is a fairly high concordance rate between twins who are identical twins versus twins who are not identical. And so what that's indicating is that there's a fairly high amount of the likelihood of someone being perfectionistic that is actually genetic.
Now, I don't know if you're a geneticist, but if it is genetic, how would that be transmitted? I mean, would it be a certain chemical that people have in their brains that tweaks toward, you know, I don't know, wanting things more parallel, more perfect, or what would be the physical or biological basis of something like that in our genes?
Usually it's a combination of genes that all come together to lead to a person either being someone who's perfectionistic or someone who is a highly emotional person. So there's no one gene that's been isolated at this point. And it's usually difficult to find a specific gene that is related to any of the psychological traits or personality traits.
Does it seem like it runs in families, Amy? And if it does, does that look genetic, or is that just, you know, a child modeling their perfectionism on the perfectionism of a mother or a father?
It's a great question. It does run in families, and it's likely that it's partially genetic, as I was just saying, but then also partially about the family environment and the parenting. There are some studies that have been done that indicate that there are certain types of family environments that may be more likely to contribute to perfectionism. So we're just finishing up a study where we looked at how much negativity and negative emotion is conveyed within the family and expressed within the family. And we found that that was highly related to perfectionism, and that perfectionism was highly related to the level of anxiety within the family. There are some other studies that have looked at things like parental criticism, and that's been shown to be related to child perfectionism as well.
Maybe it's obvious, but help me here. How would expressions of negativity in a family environment tend to shape a perfectionist in a child growing up in that circumstance?
Well, the idea is that if you have a child and the child comes home with a B as a grade, and the family says, you know, that's not good enough, why didn't you get an A? Or if the family is highly critical of the child, if the family's not expressing things like being proud of the child or encouraging the child or being excited about the child's achievements. So if that type of environment is more negative than it is positive, and if you're seeing something like that, that can kind of breed perfectionism in the child. The child wants to make the parents happy, wants to make their parents proud, but feels like they're never really getting to that point.
What's the difference then between ambition and perfectionism? You know, some parents must somehow lead or prod or something their children toward the ambition for great grades without turning them into, tangled perfectionists.
That's a great question, too. I would say that if a parent is saying, you know, it's great that you got a B, I'm really excited and proud of you that you got a B, and we're going to keep working hard, that's encouraging a child to work hard, encouraging a child to be ambitious, without saying that the child's value is contingent on the child's production of good grades or performance. And there is data suggesting that if a child feels that their love, the parent's love, is contingent on the child being perfect or excelling, that that is something that's going to lead to the child being more likely to be perfectionistic. So I do think there are ways that parents can convey a positive message to their kids, encourage the child to be ambitious without encouraging the child to hang all of their sense of identity and value on their performance.
So if their value, even being loved by the parent, is depending on this performance, you can see how that would push anxiety and maybe even fear. I mean, is perfectionism something with a root in fear?
Yes, it is highly linked to anxiety. It's also linked to other experiences as well. So eating disorders are highly related to perfectionism as well. Depression is also highly related to perfectionism as well.
And what have you been thinking in all this talk about Steve Jobs with his passing and with the biography from Walter Isaacson that came out? You know, here's a guy just famously perfectionist and not the least bit shy about imposing it on not just those right around him, but on a whole enormous company, and in some ways the world, in many ways for good. But, that combination of ruthless perfectionism, and I guess it can be destructive, but then there's this great thing that everybody wants to buy at the end of it, a product that looks so perfect.
Yeah, we do as a culture and as a society, we really value perfectionism, and we want people to be perfect. We want our doctors to be perfect. We want the things we buy to be perfect. So there is an inherent value in it as a society. And I think that's part of how his perfectionism ended up being adaptive for him. He could create the best product possible. And that led to people being pretty happy with that. At the same time, I can imagine that that could have interfered in some of his relationships. If he's always pushing his perfectionism on other people, it's going to be really tough to maintain a relationship with him. It's going to be tough to work with him because you are always going to be pushed to achieve a level that unfortunately is impossible.
I mean, there's an organization behind him. I guess people who buy the products are celebrating with their dollars the perfectionism. But those in his realm, they must have felt some satisfaction in all that. But we know from the reporting they also felt a fair amount of woe. I mean, it can produce real social tension.
Yes, it can really cause a lot of stress for people around the person who's perfectionistic. So I think one of the things that's important as a perfectionist is to make sure that you are setting goals and being ambitious for people around you as well as for yourself, but that you're not setting the goals and the bar as being so high that it's impossible to achieve.
Seems like it almost goes to a fundamental view of the world, whether it's something you accept or you shape. And, you know, people could call perfectionism something like divinity. They want that perfect world. They're going to work for it.
Yes, yes, that's definitely the case. But again, I think that given that it's something that's so difficult to achieve, it can be related to all types of anxiety and depression when you can't achieve that. So it really is a standard that's impossible for all of us.
Barbra Streisand, famously a perfectionist, until just recently she released some of the tracks that earlier in her career she thought too imperfect to put out. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Should I try? Am I strong enough? Is there time? Have I long enough? Gotta fly, and if I fall, that's the way it's gotta be. There's no other way for me.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the science and psychology of perfectionism, what makes perfectionists and perfectionists' imprint on the world. Dr. Amy Przeworski joins us from Cleveland, Ohio. She's a professor of psychology at Case Western University, does therapy and research, calls herself a recovering perfectionist. Here's one who maybe never did, and a lot of people brought his products maybe because of that. Steve Jobs, January 2010, at the iPad launch event in San Francisco, crowing to gathered the folks there about the fruits of his and his company's excruciating perfectionist labors.
This is, beyond a doubt, the most precise thing, one of the most beautiful things we've ever made. Glass on the front and the rear, and stainless steel running around. And the precision of which this is made is beyond any consumer product we've ever seen.
Gosh, you can hear it right there in his voice, Amy. You can hear his just unbelievable savoring of what he sees as something just about perfect.
Yes, absolutely.
That's amazing. We've got all kinds of feedback from our listeners here. I mean, they have a good sense of humor about this. Yuda says, I was going to send you my thoughts on perfectionism, but I just couldn't get it to sound right. And Chris says, I never called myself a perfectionist, but I've never been satisfied with anything I've ever made. Christine, when my life and home are in order, I am at peace. For her, that's what works. But Jason says, it's a mental malady I sure wish I could overcome. What's your experience, Amy, with how people carry this, those who are perfectionists? You know, what portion of them sort of love it, embrace it, maybe build their public character around it, a la Steve Jobs, and what portion feel burdened by it?
I think a lot of us, as a perfectionist myself, feel both. So I certainly feel, you know, a desire to do things perfectly, but at the same time can recognize how it's something that is a curse and something that does interfere in a lot of ways. But I don't think that entirely quiets that need to do things perfectly.
We're going to hear in just a moment from Dr. Thomas Greenspan on this front. We've got a lot of callers, though. Let's hear what they've got to say, what their experience. Ike in Charleston, South Carolina. Ike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi to you and your guest, Tom.
Hi.
I just quit a job because of this very thing. I've been a painter for 30-some-odd years. I paint construction, homes, shopping centers, bridges, you name it. And over the years, I've had to deal with this, including my own perfectionism when I first started in the trade. There's a very fine line between perfectionism and outright lunacy. And the particular person that I was working with on this last project and have been working with for some time, I noticed one thing about this person. Their their work is never in question. They always see the fault with others. And I guess to shorten it up and get you to your other callers, I want to say two things. One, never ever let let perfect become the enemy of good enough. That's a lesson I had to learn over 30 years. But beyond that, I'll ask your guest. To me, every time I've seen this, it seems to me there's some sort of a mental illness contingent to this thing. And in particular, this person that I just had to get away from, basically he displays the traits of bipolarism. Now, does any of that add into the equation?
Ike, we hear the emotion of the moment, but let us just clarify here. You just walked away from a job as a house painter because somebody was demanding more than you thought humanly reasonable to deliver.
Yeah, well, they were nitpicky in the extreme to the point that, like, as an example, you can paint, in my business, you can paint a whole house.
Yep.
And you can have one small minor defect, and then all of a sudden your whole job isn't worth a darn. And I can't, you know, this person took it to the extreme.
Yeah, Ike, we've got it. I'll take it to Amy. Amy, what about it? You know, there's Ike, fresh off a job that he said, forget it. Looking at what he perceives as a fine line between perfectionism and what he calls outright lunacy. But what about that question? Can it veer into something, you know, really amiss?
Yes, it definitely can. So it can be related to depression in that when a person is perfectionistic, they can feel helpless. They can feel as though, you know, I'm always falling short of the mark. It's also something if you're pushing it on someone else, diagnoses called personality disorders. And in a personality disorder, it's basically where a person has a personality that ends up really irritating other people, and their personality ends up interfering in their ability to get along with others. And it sounds like that's similar to what you're describing.
Here's a little bit from a 1993 interview with, this was ABC's 2020, Barbara Walters asking the perfectionist singer, then Barbara Streisand, about people who had worked with her and described her as obsessive and controlling.
You see, I don't find them insulting. I find it a compliment. My son was very articulate in a magazine about me. He was saying something about, I don't understand why my mother's wanting things to be right is a criticism. Why? Because she cares. Is that something wrong?
But Barbara, you are controlling. It does matter to you.
It does matter to me. I think that because I can't control life, I can't control people, I can control my art.
Something about controlling just a little corner of the world. Amy Przeworski, please stand by there in Cleveland. Right now with us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, is Dr. Thomas Greenspan, psychologist, marriage and family therapist, author of Moving Past Perfect and What to Do When Good Enough Isn't Good Enough. Also considers himself a recovering perfectionist. Dr. Greenspan, Thomas Greenspan, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks so much, Tom, for inviting me out here in the Midwest. I need to say we hope that all of you guys out there on the coast are safe and well.
Well, that's very kind of you. A lot of people really still digging out. I mean, my own place without power for several days now, but we're making do here. We're making do. And look at this. There's Barbara Streisand saying, you know, I mean, you hear Barbara Walters reminding her that people around her have been driven buggy by this, but there's Barbara Streisand saying, I can't control the world, but I can control my little piece of it, my art. And to her, that's a justified, important beachhead to hang on to. What do you see going on there?
Well, here's what I see going on there. What Barbara said was that she's trying to control some piece of her world. And for a lot of people who are perfectionistic, not all, but a lot of them, this is what the issue is. There's a lot of anxiety about things getting out of control. And the idea that perfectionists have in some cases is that if they control some certain things, then they can feel okay about themselves and feel okay in their lives. I think I have a different take on perfectionism than what Amy was discussing.
And okay.
And by the way, I'm impressed with Amy's writings and so forth, and with her research. But when I do work with perfectionists in my office, and incidentally, I've been at this for a long time, and I do consider myself to be a recovering perfectionist, so this is kind of a personal and a professional view of this. For one thing, I want to make a distinction for people between perfectionism and pursuing excellence. And I think this is a cornerstone element here, and it tells us something about Barbra Streisand and about Steve Jobs as well. People can pursue excellence. People can knock themselves out. They can stay up all night, throw all-nighters and so forth, and really, really, really want to do well. Mm-hmm. In and of itself, I don't consider that to be perfectionism. Perfectionism is a desire to be perfect, and by the way, not just near perfect, but perfect. But it's also a fear. This is where the anxiety Amy was talking about before comes into it. It's a fear of being imperfect. And the question is what being imperfect means to a perfectionist. And usually, a perfectionist has the emotional conviction that being imperfect means that there's something wrong with me as a person, and therefore I won't be as acceptable as a human being. So the bright line between pursuing excellence and perfectionism is this anxiety over making mistakes. And what I would say about both Steve Jobs and Barbra Streisand is absolutely their intention to do well, and obviously their talent figures in here, and you know, they want to be the best possible. But their perfectionism itself is what drives everybody crazy and what drives them crazy.
So you're saying that they're looking for love and acceptance in that urge to perfectionism?
Mm-hmm.
But what about, they might come back and say, no, I've got a vision, and I want to achieve that crystalline vision of what an iPad should be or what this song should be. You don't buy it?
Yeah, well, I do buy it, but what I say is that that's the kind of leading edge of perfectionism. That's the pursuing excellence part of it, and that in and of itself is great, and it's just fine. But the fear of the imperfections that bothers perfectionists so much, that gets in your way, actually. It turns out research shows that people who are very highly successful are less likely to be perfectionists. And the reason for that is that perfectionism represents anxiety, and anxiety gets in the way of your being able to do well. And so it will undercut you. And so I always say when I'm talking to people about perfection, you know, if I had a magic wand and I could wave it over you and get rid of your perfectionism, if anything, you might even be more successful. And the reason for that is that if I could take away your perfectionism somehow magically, mm-hmm. it wouldn't affect your talent, it wouldn't affect your energy, it wouldn't affect your sense of commitment to what you do. All of these things are true for Steve Jobs and for Barbra Streisand. And none of those things would be affected, and they would continue to be as successful as they are, and possibly even in some cases be more successful and not have the burden of this anxiety to carry around
with
them.
Wow, excellence even more within grasp if you can let go of that drive for
exactly.
Perfect excellence. We're getting into some really interesting nuance here.
Yeah.
Let me go to Neosho, Missouri, and Bob. Bob's calling. Hi, Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, this is a very, very interesting subject, and there's a couple of questions that I'm interested in.
Sure.
Whether there is a correlation between intelligence and perfection, and then the issue of the perception of perfection, because everybody has a different perception of what a standard of quality is. For example, you know, Barbra Streisand's standard of quality for singing, obviously, can be much, much, much higher than somebody else, and yet you could be striving perfection at a whole different level.
But yes.
The intelligence issue is really interesting to me.
Let us pick it up, Bob. Amy, what about it? A correlation, Bob asks, is there one between intelligence and this a tendency to perfectionism?
I don't know of any studies that have looked at that. And really, the area of perfectionism, there's a lot that still needs to be done.
Tom?
I can make a comment about
yeah.
that. Yes, as a matter of fact, a professor at Ball State and I looked at that once. Over the years, I've had a lot of chance to be involved with the gifted and talented community. And Christy Neumeister and I at Ball State took a look at this at one point, and we asked the question about whether gifted and talented children are more likely to be perfectionistic. The only study that's definitive on that shows that there isn't a correlation between those two. And it makes sense if you think about theoretically the origins of perfectionism. We might get into that. But people at any intelligence level can be perfectionistic. The thing about very bright people, though, is that, first of all, for example, if you're a student and you go to school, that's where you spend most of your life,
yep.
Then you have an opportunity there, if you're smart, to be perfect. You know, the opportunity arises because you can be the straight A
student.
By
school standards, yeah.
Yeah, so you're maybe more vulnerable to that when you're there. The other thing about a lot of bright kids is they do tend to come from families where the demands might be quite high or the expectations quite high, and that can generate perfectionism. So there's a vulnerability there, but as far as we know, there's not an actual correlation.
I mean, Bob in Missouri, his question suggests also, he asks about the perception of perfection. It seems related to his first inquiry. I mean, maybe somebody with, more horsepower intellectually may just see a different standard that they're aiming at. Or does that just sound like a perfectionist self-justification?
Yes, maybe. Certainly could be true. I mean, one of the problems we've got here is that for most things we do in life, it's a little hard to tell what exactly is perfect. I mean, I know when a student has answered all the math problems correctly, but what can we say about a perfect English essay? You know, how do we measure that?
Or whether or not the math problems are written down perfectly in pencil on the
yes,
page.
Yes, there's that.
Well, Bob, thanks for your call. Columbia, South Carolina, Kiona, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Kiona.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very, very wonderful conversation here. And I just kind of wanted to speak to the piece regarding being a perfectionist as maybe a family trait. And as a perfectionist, self-proclaimed and... accused of being a perfectionist all my life. I get it from my mother, truly. She is a teacher and a United Methodist preacher.
Mm-hmm.
So I was raised in a very religious and education-oriented background
right.
at home.
Right.
Very structured. And all of my siblings, same way, very structured. But one of my siblings really stands out. He's autistic and he does not speak. He's 20 years old. But he is the most perfectionist person I've ever met. And I know sometimes people say that the people that suffer from autism or autism spectrum, that's indicative to their personality to be very structured. But I truly believe that it's some of the autism and some of just being my mother's child.
Well, that is an interesting story. Kiona, we're up against a break here, but let us pick it up right away. Amy, you're listening. What I mean, an autistic younger brother there, what, as a almost perceived in some sense as an extreme of perfectionism in Kiona's family structure. What do you think, Amy?
There is a certain rigidity that goes along with Asperger's and autism, and that can be related to the perfectionism that she's describing. So I can certainly see the connection between those. But it also sounds like she's speaking to the idea that it also may be partially related to having grown up in that household and to her mom's perfectionism as well.
Sounds really hard to untangle here nature and nurture when the nature expresses itself so vividly, so very often. Behind us right here, James Brown, perfectionist, known for fining his backup singers if they didn't have a clean pressed shirt, a shoe shine, if they missed a beat. Here's his 1972 hit called On the Good Foot. This is On Point.
On my bad breath. You know my face is getting short and I got the blues. I got a fucking job and I'm paying my dues on the good foot.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the science and psychology of perfectionism, what makes perfectionists, and perfectionists' imprint on the world. Amy Przarski is with us from Case Western Reserve University. She writes a blog for Psychology Today called Don't Worry, Mom, a Recovering Perfectionist. And Thomas Greenspan is with us from Minneapolis today, psychologist, marriage and family therapist, author of Moving Past perfect, just in time for Thanksgiving a couple of years back, that smiling perfectionist Martha Stewart showed her viewers how to make place cards using pomegranates and made to look like little turkeys. First, the template has to be cut out perfectly. And, well, let's pick up the action here.
And now we're going to just insert the head into the stem end of the pomegranate, a little bit there. And then the tail goes around. See how cute? I think it's really cute. Right in here. And he hasn't destroyed the pomegranate at all. So it's one of those kind of useful and thoughtful kinds of centerpieces that or place cards. And you can write your guest's names right on the tail, too, if you'd like.
And suddenly, we're all feeling very imperfect in the presence of Martha Stewart. Leslie in New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks for calling, Leslie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm okay. What's your experience?
Well, my experience, I think when you were saying is, you know, is it a blessing or a curse? It's both. I'm married to a perfectionist who is great, and that was, you know, a great quality. He's super ambitious, and he's a professor at an Ivy League university.
Okay.
And because he's very ambitious and perfecting, I think that really aided him. But, you know, sometimes in his personal life, I think it can just absolutely drive you crazy because our original fights would be not over, you know, hurt feelings or anything like that. It would be like, you're using the wrong knife with the bread or the wrong knife with the tomato. You know, it had to be the perfect knife or the perfect way of doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm not that way. It took me a while to figure that out.
So how have you accommodated here? Have you tried to strive for his level of perfection, or has he come around to a more, you know, forgiving view or tolerant view of the world?
Both, I think. I think, you know, that I'm not perfecting and that things don't matter as much to me has helped him, because I think mentally it's very stressful to feel like everything has to be perfect and that you have to strive for everything being the best. And, you know, we were setting up the hurricane preparedness, you know, this weekend.
Sandy.
Let's have some friends over. And I went down in the basement to do something. He's like, make sure you close the cabinet drawer.
Right.
You have to have things right. And, I mean, those are just little things in a big picture of striving for your best all the time.
Yeah.
But we have a little 1.5-year-old. We have 2 children. And our youngest child, I keep laughing, that he is showing me signs of wanting things to be perfect already. If he takes his bib off, he has to put it in the same place that I put it. And I didn't notice it even knew where it was supposed
right,
to be.
Right. Out. But he does it 1.5, and here it comes already while you're living with it in your marriage, for better and sometimes for worse or more difficult. Leslie, I really appreciate that call. I am sure there are thousands of people nodding along, you know, who know relationships like that or may be in one. I mean, Thomas Greenspan, this can become a real issue in relationships, work relationships, marriage relationships. And very often, my observation is even when it's articulated and laid out and everybody sees what's going on, it's hard for people to get out of this vice, if that's what it becomes.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And it does have, and there's even research that supports this, that it does have a crucial effect on marriages and on work relationships and so forth. And some perfectionists can drive other people crazy. So we have a couple such as this come into my office, and they're, you know, freaked out and want to know, you know, how to help and what to do and so forth. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that I want to know under these circumstances, and sometimes it takes a while to get to this, but I would ask the person who's perfectionistic, you know, what does it seem to you will happen if things are not perfect? And what I'm aiming for is what the, you know, the meaning of a mistake is. And usually what I'm going to end up finding out in one way or another, and, you know, whatever words, is that it means there's something wrong with me. And it means I'm not going to be acceptable as a person.
What if they don't say, the world will simply fall short of what it could be, what I envision?
Right. And that typically is what they are going to say. Mm-hmm. And we're going to want to kind of try to get underneath that, you know, because that sort of stops the argument there. And of course, there's at that point, there's really nothing you can do. This is what I'm saying. I'm convinced of this. And so then we have to start probing more deeply to find out, you know, what the source of the anxiety is about all these things. And, you know, again, exactly what it is they think is going to happen. If things go wrong, it's one thing to say, well, then it won't be right. But of course, that's circular reasoning, and we want to get beyond that.
Do you counsel the perfectionist to be the one who stands down changes? Do you counsel some kind of compromise on this, or how do you? Maybe there's no one answer.
Well, and this is a whole interesting thing, too, and Amy does a lot of work with this in the more cognitive and behavioral approaches to perfectionism, which are terrific. There's a lot of really important suggestions there for people to do. But I've found that there's a dilemma that gets created by that, which I need to get beyond before I can use these more behaviorally oriented approaches. The problem that I frequently have is that when I start suggesting to perfectionistic people that they, you know, go out and make a mistake and see what that mm-hmm. feels like and
right.
so forth.
Go crazy.
Yeah, you know, it's a perfectly reasonable suggestion. But the problem is that they'll come back and they will have tried to do the assignment perfectly.
Oh, a perfect error, a perfect flaw will be created.
Exactly. And so I end up being part of the problem when I do that.
Right.
So, you know, I need to take a couple of steps back and see if I can get underneath that. And what I end up discovering is, first of all, like I say, there's a lot of anxiety connected with perfectionism. Perfectionism is also a self-esteem issue. Again, for a perfectionist, their emotional conviction is that if I do something wrong and if I'm not perfect, then I'm worthless or I'm not good enough or I won't be acceptable enough. And those are the kinds of things that come from our developmental history when we're growing up. They're messages that we hear in a whole variety of ways. We don't need to be told that directly. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of anxiety. And if a child is growing up in an environment where it seems like there's a lot of anxiety that's got to be controlled. Everybody is freaked out or everybody is critical or whatever it is. One of the solutions to that, it's not the only one, but one of the solutions to that is to make yourself perfect so that everybody will calm down, they'll be proud of you,
right.
and so on and so forth.
Be the keystone of that perfect world that's where the order is restored or calm is restored.
Exactly. I'm going to lead everybody out of the darkness and so on.
But of course, then Voltaire says, the perfect is the enemy of the good.
Absolutely. And, you know, I used to say that, yes, I'd like my surgeon to be a perfectionist, but I wouldn't want to be married to one.
Right.
But I've kind of changed my mind about that because I've had several clients who are surgeons, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, okay.
We've had long conversations about that. Well, and as a matter of fact, in the medical community, there are people who write about this a lot and come down to exactly that line. The perfect is the enemy of the good. If you're a perfectionist and you're doing something as detailed and as specific as surgery, it's going to turn out that if you're very anxious about being perfect, mm-hmm. you're less likely to do the job you need to do.
You may spend too long snipping away in there when you could be done with it and healing already or something.
Absolutely.
Oh,
you
my
know,
gosh.
While you're trying to tie things up right, the patient can bleed to death.
What about this perfect is the enemy of the good? We all understand what that can mean. You know, you're always looking for something a little more perfect. You don't just get the good done. But there must be plenty of perfectionists who say, I don't want the good. I want the perfect. Amy.
Yes, there are. And I think that's part of where it becomes maladaptive. So if you're giving up happiness, you're giving up all of the good that you could experience in the pursuit of perfectionism, that's a problem. Because ultimately, what most of us want is to be happy. And what a lot of perfectionists say is that it really interferes in their happiness.
Interesting. Let's go to Nick in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Nick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to echo Voltaire in the following situation. You know, the perfect is the enemy of the good. When the perfectionist, such as myself, meets an uber-perfectionist machine, the computer, and one is trying to program that computer, who is ultimately finicky about syntax and perfection, and thwarts efforts to just satisfy with the good, to write a good program. I'm a mathematical modeler. I deal with brain imaging and autism. I write programs, and I want to do good, but I can have anxiety, irritability, and depression when I have to wrestle with a machine that must do exactly what it wants me to do in order to create something good.
Nick, so you're saying what you write? You are a programmer, also a software programmer, and the machine wants perfect.
I'm a professor in psychiatry, okay. But I write mathematical functions, okay. And I apply data to them.
Yes.
So I write a function. I have an idealistic idea of what I want to try to get out of a brain image.
Sure.
And I do that, but then I'm thwarted by little syntax things, the limits of the computer language.
Yeah.
I think this is an experience of all programmers. I really want to put out to shout to them. Create beautiful things that other people enjoy, the perfectionists that they need to be in playing a game or reading results and so forth.
So if the machine is the uber perfectionist, Nick, does that mean technology is setting an even higher bar, sort of taunting us toward an even more unachievable?
I really think so, or at least the person that is in the design, software design and analysis industry must face this a lot and put a higher bar for themselves to be able to perfectionist meeting such high criteria, forced to be even more perfect.
Wow.
Than they would like to be.
Well, there's a picture of a new kind of hamster setup. Tom Greenspan, what about it? Technologists feeling that the technology itself sort of taunts them or requires them up to a uber bar of perfectionism.
Yeah, right. Although, to be honest, I was reminded again of Martha Stewart, because it's the same kind of thing, only in human
form. The icing on the cake perfectly performed.
Right. Yes, the standards are set very high there. But I think basically what that comes down to is that there's some people who are perfectionistic who would be in a job like that who would be driven half nuts. And there are some people in jobs like that who are not necessarily perfectionistic, who may have a different view on that. You know, my goal, if I'm a programmer or whatever, is to make this thing work, and that's what I'm going to do. And if I'm not sweating the mistakes and so forth, it may be easier for me to do that, and I don't beat up on myself so much. So
Nick,
it depends on your point of view.
Yeah, Nick, we hope you find the flow there with your uber perfectionist technology. Tish in Nashville is calling. Hi, Tish, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you today a little about my issue. I'm a seamstress and a designer, and I've been dealing with perfectionism and some level of OCD for quite some years now, and I've had to come to an understanding with myself so that I can sleep at night and and function. I find myself really, really doting over little tiny details that everybody swears nobody will ever notice.
And you're talking about clothing design and seamstress work. That seems to be highly susceptible to that kind of meticulous oh my gosh. So how do you deal with it?
Well, I do a lot of custom work too, so it compounds the issue because I have perfectionist clients.
Yeah.
And I worry over things that they probably would never notice, but then they're noticing other things, and I'm like, oh, how could I not see that? You know,
right.
But I've come to an understanding, and I try to. I guess it comes to meditation for me. I try to set my scene before I go to work in the morning. I have a studio here in my house.
Yeah.
So I just kind of, breathe and say, okay, let the creativity flow. I know I have the talent to do this. I just have to let it go. And my family is very supportive. Bless my children's hearts. Sometimes I get so upset about a mistake. They, oh, Mom,
right,
it's okay.
Right,
it's okay.
Right.
You know?
Right. You can live with it, Tish. You can live with it. You've come to an understanding. I love that phrase here. Amy, here's a seamstress and a clothing designer. You can imagine in that trade. She uses the phrase OCD as well. I wonder if you speak to that. But, she's had to find her way of dealing with this impulse. And it sounds like she's got a handle on it. Maybe not perfect, but a handle on it, Amy.
Yes, I really loved what she was just speaking about, this idea of acceptance and embracing the fact that you are imperfect and the fact that there aren't going to be things that you're going to do absolutely perfectly. I think certainly in that type of a career, there can be a push for perfectionism. But, you know, generally, as long as the product is going to stay together and it's going to look fairly good, you know, it's going to be okay. I also think that imperfections can actually add to the beauty of it. The same way that, you know, I was certainly attracted to some of my husband's imperfections. I saw them as making him more interesting to me. And I think the same type of thing applies to a garment as well.
Tom, when you see perfectionists who find an understanding, like Artish in Nashville, who find a flow or accept some of those imperfections, do they feel like fallen people, you know, or do they feel more, I don't know, at home in the world?
Well, it kind of depends. Her comments are really interesting to me because, to the extent that anxiety is involved in perfectionism, it does make all kinds of sense to find ways to step back and be more calm. And I think when people can do that, I think it really helps in terms of their perfectionism. Usually, that's the kind of thing that happens when their self-esteem starts to rise. And so, if she is able to do this and then is able to discover that she can approach her work with more equanimity, I guess we would say, and, with less anxiety and stress and so forth, she can start to feel better about it. And what's ultimately going to happen then is that she's going to feel better about the fact that she might make a mistake, that that's going to mean something entirely different to her. It's just something to learn from and move on.
Well, perfectionist, today we feel your pain and the beauty of the aspiration. Maybe that flow from Tish in Nashville is the best advice for everybody here. I'm really grateful to the two of you for being with us today. Dr. Thomas Greenspan, joining us today from Minneapolis, author of Moving Past Perfect, How Perfectionism May Be Holding You Back, Your Kids and You, and What You Can Do About It. Thank you very much for being with us, Tom.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And Dr. Amy Przeworski in Cleveland, Ohio at Case Western Reserve University. Her blog is Don't Worry, Mom. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much. It's been my pleasure.
This is On Point.